Welcome to Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. This talk show addresses strategies for thinking in today's complex aviation world. Now, here's Rich Weber, Chief Pilot for the Jacksonville Sheriff's Aviation Unit and aviation speaker from Jacksonville, Florida, who is today's host.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm your host, Rich Weber, with the Florida Aviation Network, broadcasting in the clear from the Howard Hughes exhibit at the Florida Air Museum at Lakeland Linder Regional Airport in Lakeland, Florida at Sun and Fun 2013. And our guests today are with the Raiders demo flight team, and I've got Marty Sheenan, Austin, and Steve.
Welcome. Nice to meet you, Rick.
Great. Well, it's great to have you, and for you guys to be able to take time out of your busy schedule to come talk with us and kind of tell us a little bit about what you do with the flight demo team and give us a little bit of background.
Okay. Well, we're a five-plane aerobatic team based out of New Jersey. Austin is our number five pilot, and Steve is our announcer. Mm-hmm. Both these guys are in college and working around the clock for the team. Austin and Steve put together the music and the video, do a lot of legwork that normally doesn't get done. They do an outstanding job. Austin's father is my number three pilot, and Jeff's been flying with me for about 6 years. We've been flying aerobatics and air shows for 10.
Excellent.
So.
Now, you mentioned something about a video with music now. Is this a video that some of the spectators can watch as they're also watching the airplanes maneuver, or is this something more the video, you meaning more like on the website, they can
Sure.
check that out on the website?
It's on our Facebook page and on our on YouTube and on our website, RaidersFlightDemoTeam.com.
RaidersFlightDemoTeam.com, excellent. Mm-hmm. And if they forget that, they can just remember the Raiders and Google it and get to the website.
That's correct.
So on the website then, there's probably a wealth of information that they can gather about the team and a little bit about the history and
Sure.
in the aircraft. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about what all.
Well, the aircraft, we have four Yak 52s and one Chinese Yak or a CJ6. Mm-hmm. They're made in Romania, and the Chinese aircraft was made in Nanchang, China. They're plus 6, minus 3 Gs on the Chinese version, and plus 7 and minus 5 on the Russian version.
And that's probably as much as you probably want to pull.
Yeah, we probably don't use all of that. They're a good aircraft, learning how to do basic aerobatics. We do the full complement, hammerheads, formation loops, formation rolls, and then Austin does inverted passes and... Well, why don't you tell them some of the aerobatics that you do, Austin?
Well, as a solo, the key to my part of the performance is filling all the gaps because we want something in front of the crowd the entire time. So it's all about timing.
So they always have something to look at.
Exactly. So as the three-ship or the four-ship, depending on our configuration, is off at either show left or show right, it's my responsibility to be right there to fill the gap. So inverted passes, four-point rolls, pretty much any basic aerobatic maneuver.
So then what gives you the clue or the key in that you need to fill in some gaps? Because you guys are talking, I guess, back and forth, or you just know the routine and know then
right.
to...
We practice it all the time so that when we're finishing our last maneuver, he knows that I've got 90 degrees to go on a certain maneuver, and he knows that he's 30 seconds away. He starts to push as we're starting to exit the box.
It gives you time to finish pulling, coming around, like mm-hmm. you said, on a 90 degree, and it gives him the key that it's time to move in for the pass. And that, like you said, then that is going to keep something up there for the spectators, for everybody watching.
Right. Something's always out in show center.
Excellent. So then you're talking about the show and what all will you guys put on then? Do you have different ones, different routines that you can do for different air shows?
Mm-hmm. Since we're all volunteers and all of us have day jobs, most of us are airline pilots. Some guys don't have the flexibility right now. One of our guys was furloughed for 3 years. He just got called back, so he's mm-hmm. unable to fly with us for about the next 2 months till he gets his schedule down pat. Mm-hmm. So we've adjusted it to a three-plane and a solo.
Excellent.
So we have a lot of flexibility. We've got talented guys working for us so that they're able to adjust. The only key is that we practice. You have to practice a lot in the new formations.
It's critical. Absolutely, it's critical because, one, you know, if you're not up to speed and you're not proficient with it, then that's where it can invite some kind of, you know, accidents,
sure,
or anytime, things like that, obviously. So will you guys hopefully then, with the weather up in New Jersey,
mm-hmm,
gives you, if you afford enough time to be able to get prepared for this down here since the weather's starting to break?
Sure. It was, what we've noticed was our practice were early March. It's nice and cold up in New Jersey. The engines were performing extremely well. We come down here, it's now 80, 90 degrees. A real lack of performance in the aircraft. Big change in our power available.
And timing.
Timing, everything. Just it takes more out. Have to climb up higher to get more energy to execute the maneuvers.
Mm-hmm.
The energy bleeds off quicker because there's less thrust available coming from the engine. So that was our biggest, eye opener.
A little bit of a learning curve, or
sure,
you know, to get that and some of the timing practice to, mm-hmm, be able to do that. Excellent. Now, where do you talking about with everybody's a volunteer? The process, I guess, that you, if somebody's interested up, you know, up in the area that wants to join the team, what all, what do you look for and what kind of?
Well, the biggest thing is they have to be local. It's really difficult,
sure,
for team members to be more than, say, an hour away.
Mm-hmm.
Like aircraft, we've had team members come in and leave trying to fly with, say, a T6, just not compatible. So just location, credentials. You have to be able to have your aerobatic competency cards. Austin has his 250-foot card, which he just got, mm-hmm, and now he's working on getting his formation aerobatic card.
Which means?
He's able to do the aerobatics that he's doing now as a solo in the formation.
I see. Just so, another level of proficiency that's required in the industry.
Correct.
Absolutely. Have you all tried different aircraft and found that the Yak has been probably the best suited, or just kind of also because
yeah,
it's kind of a volunteer organization that you have to, you know, do with what you can, you know, get a hold of? And
for the price to get into the aircraft, it's the most reasonable. We found we had two aircraft that have CJ6s, the Chinese version.
Mm-hmm.
They have their own challenges. They're not inverted capable. Sustained inverted flight.
Mm-hmm.
They accelerate very well, and they have a high top end, but they don't have the roll rate that a Yak has. So you have to adjust the formation if they're in it to accommodate that.
So where they'll fit in.
Mm-hmm.
I see. Good deal. So, how many flights are you going to do here at Sun and Fun?
We've flown twice so far this week.
Mm-hmm.
Just out practicing. We're scheduled to fly Friday night and Saturday night as a two-ship.
Now, is that going to be in the evening while it's still daylight? You don't do any kind of
No, it's we're qualified. Three of us are qualified to fly at night aerobatics. So I have two of our team members are here that are qualified to do that.
Excellent.
It's Jeff Daniel, Austin's father, and myself.
Mm-hmm.
And we have lights that illuminate the smoke, and it makes the aircraft look like it's about a 30-foot long flame coming out the
cool.
Bottom.
I bet that's pretty neat then,
oh,
isn't it?
Is.
Yeah, that's going to be a
Yeah, when we practiced, we found out rather quickly that we had to call the police and the fire department to let them know that there wasn't an airplane that was on fire.
Yeah, that would be that would be an easy one for somebody to look up and think that
and cause panic.
Excellent. So, and then you've probably got a busy schedule. Do you guys, obviously, with having to work full-time and everything, then you've got to be able to make these shows, but you've also got to fit it into your schedule. What kind of schedule do you guys have for this season?
We have between 10 and 12. Two shows are still up in the air with sequestration. Some shows are on the fence whether or not they're going to hold their shows or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the military pulls out of a show, it makes it real difficult to draw the numbers. So
just the crowd, kind of the numbers of the crowd go down and
mm-hmm.
makes it difficult. Now, you said that it's a all volunteers, but what all does your organization do? I understand that you also do some fundraisers and
mm-hmm.
things.
A portion of our event fees we put into a kitty and sponsor high school students to get their private pilot's license.
Excellent.
So local high schools in the area have benefited by, we would put up $2,000, the airport we fly out of, the Flying W, matches our funds and gives enough for a student to go almost through private.
That's good. That gets them a head start. Because as we know, you know, our future is what we need to be thinking about too, and we all see that, you know, and hear about and read about the pilot shortage, that's, you know, the upcoming pilot shortage, whether it's, you know, flying aerobatics or whether it's flying charter or flying for the airlines or flying helicopters in that industry, whatever it may be. So we need to think about the future. So that's good. That's a great thing. That it's a good cause.
Right, and we also have the Tuskegee Airmen that we support in the local area, that when we're at shows, they're at the same show, so we've kind of partnered with them and bring them to the local high schools and cover their performer fee, and they talk to the high school and middle school kids so that they get a grasp and a sense of what they went through to become pilots.
Yes.
So
and what it might take, and maybe some challenges that these kids may face, you know, just because of the economical, you know, the cost and everything that that it's going to be. So that's good. That's some really good things that you guys can do that help out. And
sure.
Do you get any kind of sponsorships that kind of help with the cost?
Sure, we do. Sometimes, last year we were sponsored by the local Toyota dealerships in the South Jersey area, and they're going to reach out to us. We fly the Atlantic City Air Show, one in South Jersey, and one Jones Beach, New York. So they're local enough that the dealerships around there are sponsors.
Oh, they're willing to sponsor because they're going to get some good coverage then. That's great.
Yeah. You know, we would do interviews prior to the show, send aircraft out there a week or 2 weeks prior, fly media people, and get them their advertising return on their investment.
That's good. Well, it's a win-win then for everybody, because then it helps you, you know, your organization out, and also helps them to get some advertising, which is a good deal in reaching out. So now you guys also perform up at Oshkosh?
We haven't yet. It's our aircraft are slow.
They're slow.
they do about 120 to 140. So for us, it's a pretty long stretch. So what we've been trying to do is
meaning the stretch because of the distance for Oshkosh.
Sure. Yeah.
For the spectator row, in other words.
For us to transport the aircraft out to Oshkosh and back. So for Florida, we've scheduled air shows halfway, three quarters of the way down, and on the way home to help defray the cost of coming to Oshkosh.
So we've been staging the aircraft.
Summit Fund.
Or to Summit Fund, yeah, that's good. I'm sorry, what did you say, Austin?
I said we've been staging the aircraft, and that allows us to progress.
Yes,
bit
you can
bit.
Go part of the way, do an air show, and then do another air show. So where did you go? Where did you guys stop at on the way down then?
We stopped in Columbus, Georgia, 3 weeks ago. And then on our way home, we're flying the Vidalia show in Vidalia, Georgia.
Excellent.
And we had other shows that were scheduled, but they were primarily military shows, so they were canceled due to lack of funds. So
yeah, that makes it kind of tough.
So it's really putting a crimp on the industry this year.
So how many do you guys, so there's five ships? You have five ships all together?
That's correct.
So then how many does it take to
at a minimum, like on Friday night and Saturday night, we'll do a two-ship night show. For most shows, we'll do a three-ship or a four-ship show.
Okay, excellent. Now, how many personnel does it take to support all this? Because you have pilots, and like you have Steve. And
sure, we have.
What else do you have?
In addition to Steve, we have Will Brennan, who's been with us for 3 years, who is our line chief. He runs around, makes sure the aircraft are serviced, ready to go for the next flight. And additionally, our slot is Morton Stoverud, who is also our mechanic.
So he can fill in as a pilot and a performer as well?
Oh, he is. He is, you know, you ask him, he's our pilot.
Okay.
But he's also our saving grace when something breaks and nobody else knows how to fix it. He's there. He's a certified AMP and an AI. So.
Oh, because that's important, especially with, you know, the types of airplanes. It's not like you're just going to be able to go to the local FBO and and get service on them and parts.
Right.
So then you have that issue of, you know, getting parts shipped in and then having somebody be able to
certified to work on them,
to because to do the work and get it certified.
They are experimental, but we're not experimental home built, so you still have to have an AMP work on it and sign it off.
Right. Yeah, the sign offs and everything.
So
excellent. Steve, tell us a little bit about your part in this.
Well, my part is I'm the announcer for the team. I grew up in Austin. We went to high school together. We're both Eagle Scouts, so that's how we met each other, through Boy Scouts. And he brought me onto the team, and I started making the soundtrack with him for the show. So when the planes are performing in the air, they're listening to the music on the ground for the crowd.
So then you guys have to also have equipment to be able to transport the you know, the speakers and the sound system to be able to get that put up to go.
Yeah. Well, with the planes, I have a small package we carry. Usually the shows provide that. We just got a new sponsor, Sennheiser. They're an audio equipment company. They're going to help us out with some of our audio equipment for our performance.
Excellent. Sennheiser, of course, is a great, you know, great headset. Now, do they also sponsor headsets for y'all from the plane?
Not yet. We're working on that.
We
have a really good relationship with Whalen Lights, and they were instrumental in helping us get our night package together, which when we put a four ship up doing four plane night aerobatics, it's pretty spectacular.
I bet that is. That's a lot of lights and a lot of lit up smoke, right?
Yes, it is.
Good, good. So then, to kind of go on with what you're saying, Steve, about the how do you know? I guess it just depends on what show you're going to, how much audio that you're going to need. Then,
yeah, we have a couple bass tracks we use that we mix together before the season starts, and that has, you know, songs that we all like as performers to, you know, fly to. So they, you know, and stuff the crowd likes, so everyone's happy with that. And then during the show, I'm announcing, narrating the show, so the crowd knows what's happening, what maneuvers we're doing, and that, you know, they find out about us.
What to expect next, and what's coming up, and even talk about, you know, maybe each airplane, and you announce maybe who the pilot is and what they're doing.
Steve is great at adding color, and you wouldn't know it coming from his voice right now, but he has a great air show voice.
Excellent. Maybe being a DJ might be in the future, possibly.
Well, Steve majors in the music industry. He does DJ, so that's where it comes from. He's pretty good at it.
Excellent. Excellent. How did you, so you got involved with this, Steve, with going to school with Austin?
Yeah, through Austin and his father, kind of, they got me into the door with aviation. So I brought my skills to the table with music and my music. So, you know, brought that in, kind of added that to the team. You know, and they helped me out. I'm trying to learn how to fly, too. So.
That was my next question. I was going to ask you then, have you pursued that? Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's kind of hard right now. I'm a full-time student at Monmouth University, getting 2 degrees in 4 years. So I'm busy there, but, you know, hopefully right after I graduate, I'll have time to sit down, get my private, and start working more on being a pilot, too.
Good, working on some time. So, Austin, tell me a little bit about your background with flying and what you have done so far in your flying career to get to this point where you're able to do this?
My father is my instructor, and so he got me flying at a very young age in a Yak-52. So I started...
That was the first airplane you flew?
Yes, sir. So I started out in the Yak-52 doing primary training, and hanging out with these guys, that's kind of how we got in on the bottom floor with the team. Mm-hmm. So being able to do air shows with my dad is a pretty cool thing. Him and I, he has a crop dusting company in New Jersey, so him and I crop dust together, and then in addition, I'm a crew chief in the New Jersey Air National Guard. So,
is that right?
Yep, so working on that slowly but surely, getting finished college and having a lot of fun.
Excellent. So what ratings have you obtained so far?
I have a commercial instrument. I just finished up my instrument.
Good.
So looking towards multi, and also trying to increase... my level on the aerobatic card, getting formation aerobatics, and
so now with the aerobatic card, you have the proficiency, and then the FAA has to obviously sign off on it. And
correct.
What's the procedure, I guess, for the aerobatic card, and to their standards that you have to go by? But tell us, how does that
the initial, well, they've just changed the rules literally within the last month and a half. But the levels, normal aerobatics can be completed above 1,500 feet, 4 miles off any federal airway, and outside of basically lettered airspace associated with an airport.
Okay.
But look up the rules before you go do it.
Yeah.
So anything that's below 1,500 feet AGL requires an aerobatic competency evaluation and a card that waives that rule. And you can only do that inside a waivered airspace, like at an air show.
Were they actually designated as airspace or an air box? Even like up at home, then, you've probably have an aerobatic box.
Correct, for practice. Or you have to find an airspace that complies and conforms to all the FARs and stay above 1,500 feet.
Mm-hmm. To be able to do that. So a lot of the viewers don't know this, so I'm going to ask you some of these questions just to because it would be quite informative that they're probably curious about. If even like at home with the aerobatic box, is there certain times, or do you call like flight service and they make it, mm-hmm. Kind of then designated as an aerobatic, active aerobatic box?
That's correct. It puts it out as a NOTAM, but it's only activated probably an hour prior to the box going hot. Mm-hmm. And then once you've finished, you deactivate it. So if you're not reading the NOTAMs that hour, you may end up inadvertently flying through an aerobatic airspace. Mm-hmm. Now, for wavered airspace, like for an air show, that's normally published weeks in advance, so mm-hmm. it's out there.
Mm-hmm. Now, with the changes, does that... They don't call it then a TFR then, do they?
Well, because they also will put up a temporary flight restriction around the airport so that, they're looking to maintain safety around the airspace. Mm-hmm. So I believe they do put up a TFR around it.
Yeah, that's going to help with somebody that's flying along that maybe want to not, who would know that sun defense not going on, but if they, wanted to land, but it was actually during active air show times.
Correct.
So...
So the levels, there's a 800-foot card, so that would be your first card that you would get after you would go to an evaluator.
Let you come down to
800 feet. Then 500 feet, then 250 feet, and then a surface level waiver.
And so, Austin, you're at the 250, so that's your third. You've made it now to the third level.
Yep, one to go.
That's good. That's great. And... So then, how do they? What is the process of? Is it similar to like what a when the FAA comes out? How do they determine? They fly with you?
They have designees that are aerobatic competency evaluators that will be at the site where you're performing.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have an evaluation done at a show. It has to be at.
So they come like for example, they would come up to New Jersey mm-hmm. or someone from the local
right.
FISDO. Would then come over to the airport, and mm-hmm. do they go up and ride with whoever?
No, they never get in the airplane. they evaluate you from the ground, and it's normally we go to Warrington, Virginia, where our ACE evaluator is, and it's associated with a runway, so it's set up just like a show site, which is perfect. He evaluates us from the ground, gives us different maneuvers, we'll do our routine, and then somewhere in the middle of the routine, he'll give us a simulated emergency or something to handle that shows our ability as a formation aerobatic team that we can handle things being thrown at us in the middle of a routine.
Mm-hmm. Something that may be, not planned,
correct.
That you have to be able to handle that, which could be an emergency if it wasn't handled correctly.
Correct.
Absolutely.
And... You fill out the paperwork that once you've completed the evaluation. Now, these gentlemen are acting for the FAA, just like a designee. They're not mm-hmm. FAA employees.
I see.
So then the paperwork is sent through the ACE evaluator to the FAA, and the FAA signs the card and sends it out.
Oh, so the designees then sign it off. It goes to, what should be then their supervisory, above them is the ACE evaluator. Who sends it into them?
The FAA. And the FAA is actually the person who signs the card.
I see. So then to get the surface level, then that's just going to take even more, evaluation and...
Mm-hmm. You have to have so many shows.
So many hours.
So many shows in a certain amount of time at say you're at a 250-foot level, and I don't know how many you have to have. I believe it's like 10 shows within 18 months or 12 shows within 18 months.
Hmm. That's good. That's a fair amount of shows, though.
Yes. Just,
and obviously that's primarily to maintain proficiency and safety.
Correct.
Good. Well, you yourself now, you're also an airline pilot?
Yeah. I've been a captain for a major airline for the last 10 years.
Excellent.
And retired Marine pilot.
Oh, is that right? What did you fly in the Marines?
Phantoms and
really?
A4s.
Yeah. Oh, man. That was exciting, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it was a great time.
So you spent some time in Vietnam? Or
no,
just
not
outside
that
of that, right, yeah.
Okay.
Just checking. Well, yeah. Well, you know, the Phantom, you know, because it was pretty much coming phasing out, I guess.
The Marines flew them all the way up through 19. We put ours in the boneyard in 1991.
That late?
Yeah.
Well, see, that's an education for me then.
Yeah.
So I thought that, you know, probably towards the end of the Vietnam era is when they started going out, but obviously not.
No, we actually flew aircraft that were in Davis-Monthan in storage for 5 or 6 years and brought them back out and reworked them. So,
so that was pretty exciting.
Yeah, it was a great airplane. Good.
So now with the Raiders organization, you guys all being volunteers then, so you rely a lot on sponsorships because that's what's going to be, you know, obviously it's expensive to do this and to be able to travel and offset the upkeep on the aircraft and all the crew, you know, everybody still needs, you know, you got to have the cost involved with that, so that makes it kind of difficult, I guess, at
it
times.
It does, and it kind of limits our area of operation, you know, so we just to keep the cost down.
But I guess with you know, getting more sponsorships, and as you guys are sure always seeking more sponsors, then that's going to help. And,
sure
and
does.
People going to the website and learning more about it and maybe getting more involved with the Raiders organization and maybe deciding
great.
They want to contribute. That's where I'm going with this, that would be hopefully helpful for y'all.
We can always use it.
Good. Good deal. Well, it was great talking with you, Marty.
It was great talking to you. Thanks for
having
us.
Taking time out of your schedule to meet with us. And Austin and Steve, you know, we appreciate your input and everything, and we're looking forward to having an exciting show out there and watching you guys perform.
Well, great. Thanks for having us, and stop by and say hi.
Absolutely.
We hope you've enjoyed today's Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. Please visit our studio website to hear past programs.